right, thank God it's Friday. And not because it's the weekend, it's because it's podcast day. That means I have another great guest that's going to share their expertise with all of you. So first, my name is Rob Foster, host of Shut Up and Grind. Today we hit a milestone. This is episode number 300. Who would have thought? I remember getting told in the very beginning, you're not going to be taken seriously if you show up in a tank top. And 300 episodes later, I've been featured all over the world virtually, of course. And it's all about decide. It's all about stepping into your greatness. And that's what this show is about. It's about helping people overcome obstacles, defy the odds, and help you clear whatever is blocking your path to the success that you want. And today we're going to be talking about unlocking the power of credibility with my guest, Mitchell Levies. Let's welcome him to the show. How we doing?
We're doing great, Robert. Thank you.
Doing great. Love it. Great. Where are you joining me from?
I'm in Silicon Valley, specifically Cupertino, California, where Apple's headquartered.
Okay, awesome. Are you originally from that area?
No, East Coast type of guy.
Yeah. Whereabouts?
You know, the New York, New Jersey thing.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I'm up here in Rhode Island.
Got it.
Nice. All about that Northeast life. I went to put the live stream on, but I think it played the show I just finished. Hold on a second. Let me just pop this up. All right.
We're live.
Yeah. No, I like to see the names of the people who pop on Facebook anyway. All right. So let's dive into some of your backstory. So just tell us just a little bit about you. What's your quick 2-paragraph bio?
You know, what people think are credible are the things that I've done. So let me just share some of those and then we'll dive in obstacles and other things. So I've been in Silicon Valley for 35 years. I've started 20 companies. Nice. I've been on the board of a NASDAQ company for 9 years. I run Stoll 4 book publishing companies. We've published 750 books. Wow. I've probably been on over 3,000 stages. It just, you know, after a while, they just keep popping up. Different topics, always fun things. And I think where I'm at now is a focus on between 2019 and 2020 is interviewing 500 thought leaders on credibility and finding out what's next for me. And so that's kind of where I am now.
All right. So if you strip all of that away, who is Mitchell at his core? I asked the good questions here, my friend.
Husband. Been happily married 34 years. Father, been my son is 25 and he's amazing. Friend. If I'm thinking about the core, it's modeling what integrity is. It's modeling the elements of credibility. And it's my wife and I are those types of friends to people in our network, friends or family, that if you need us, you call us at 2-3 in the morning and we'll be right there. And that's sort of, when I think about who we are, that's who we are.
All right. I want to take it another layer deeper. So before you were a husband, before you were a father, before you were the credibility guru,
a couple years ago,
then? Who were you then?
You know, I think when I was 9, my parents got divorced.
Okay.
And dad tried to do the helicopter dad thing.
Yeah.
And I think at that, and I was angry. And I think for me, the question that I don't remember much of my childhood, but what I do remember is questioning whether or not, or what should a father be? And so I think that stems back to my thought process on integrity is what should, like, is there an official role that somebody who's a father, what should they do? Who should they be? How should they act?
See, and I'm glad I asked that question because that was a solid answer. Yeah. It's like, I try to correlate what people's present, how much of their present stemmed from something in the past. Cause typically when I'm helping people write stories, because I'm a storytelling coach. And we always start there. We always start in the childhood, because 9 times out of 10, we know what we want to do back then. Then just as we grow throughout life, our wings get clipped one by one by one, as whether it's society, whether it's your friend group, whether it's your parents. And so I just like to get down to the heart. Like, if you were to ask me that question, my first response is, if you take away all the hats that I wear, I'm a competitor. And like everything that I do in life, I see it as a competition, whether it's the podcast, I coach track and field, you know, speaking, and within the gym. Like, I approach everything as a challenge, because that's who I am at my core.
Interesting. I love what you do. Ultimately, we're doing very similar things when I focus on clarity. Yes. Because what I'm doing when I'm looking at somebody to bring out their story, but I don't do it in the same story way. We have some overlap that's really powerful.
Yes.
What I'm looking for is I'm looking for their kryptonite. Mm. Because oftentimes their superpower is when they overcame their kryptonite.
Yes. I love that. I love that. Go a little deeper into that, if you don't mind.
Let me tell you what I do today, because this is sort of where it stems from, and then we'll back it up for you. So what I have now done in doing the interviews, the 500 interviews, and now I've done this now over 1,000 times, is I can help any company or any individual articulate who they are in less than 10 words. Mm. So it's, for me, I have a name for it. I call it a CPOP, your customer point of possibilities.
Okay.
And what it comes down to is the simplicity of, if you are a credible person, and there are 10 values of credibility, and you could always watch one of my TED Talks or read the book on what those are. So there are 10 values of credibility. And if you are a credible human, or if you are a credible company, you are of service to others. Okay, that's pretty obvious. So now the formula for CPOP is two pieces. Who do you serve? And what pain point or what pleasure point does your audience perceive themselves having? So that's what 10 words or less. It's who and what. This comes before why. This comes before everything else. So now, when I hear you speak, and when I'm working with other people, I get the same thing. What comes out of their mouth when I say who they serve and why or where they come from, many times I label it in a concept called marketing cookie cutter BS. Mm. Right? They have some marketing cookie cutter approach where society told them this is who they were, and they said, yes, I am. Mm. As opposed to doing what's best and most important for them in terms of how they are of service to others. And so when you start stripping away all the details, the bottom line comes down to some fundamental core thing that was a pain point for them personally. And as they, i.e. their kryptonite, as they overcame that, as they made that something that they've put in the past, or mostly in the past, they've recognized they have a superpower. Not only do they have a superpower, but they have the strong desire that other people don't go through what they went through. And so I'll call their pain in the past was their kryptonite, and their superpower going forward is what they've overcome themselves and have a desire to make sure other people can easily, don't have to go through all the pain and suffering that they went through to overcome, you know, what they have themselves.
I watched a video yesterday. It was from the movie The Joker, where the Joker said the hero and the villain are both pushed by the same thing. He's like, it's pain. And he's like, the villain takes that pain and says, the world hurt me, now I'm gonna hurt the world. Where the hero says, the world hurt me, and I want to make sure it doesn't hurt anyone else. So like, as I was listening to you talk, it reminded me of that video. And to illustrate what I said about me being a competitor, how you said at the core, there's some underlying pain. I was the youngest Well, I am the youngest of seven, and we were all athletes. And I got to watch all of them get their stripes. And I love my siblings, don't get me wrong. But just in that moment, I was always somebody's little brother. And I hated it. I hated it with a passion. And I saw them getting their names in the paper and the trophies and the ribbons and the track and field medals, MVP awards. And it was just like, oh, here's Monique's little brother. Here's Ralph's little brother. I'm like, my name is Rob. My name is Robert. Like it drove me to the competitor that I am now. I'm turning 50 this year. I've been holding on to that my entire life. So spot on. I just wanted to illustrate your point.
No, I love it. And it's what's really interesting when you watch in movies, a lot of times the villains have the best lines.
Oh, yeah. So true. Uh-oh, did I lose you? Uh-oh. Okay, well, we're here with Mitchell. Hopefully he comes back on. And see, this is the downside of live streaming. It's when stuff like this happens, I have to go on some idle talk until the guest comes back on. So I'm assuming this was on his end because everything looks good on mine. So let's see here. All right, so for whoever's watching, drop me something in the comments over here that you would like to discuss while we wait for Mitchell to come back. And in the meantime, we can talk about vulnerability for a minute, because I think we're going to get there in his talk. So if you're new to the show, oops, lost him completely. There we go. He's back.
This has not happened. I have done so many podcasts. I'm going to get my shoes on and go outside. We lost power.
Oh, okay. That's and, a first.
And that doesn't, you know, I'm in Silicon Valley. It's not like I'm in the Philippines or some country where that doesn't happen. For whatever reason, my entire house lost power. So if you don't mind, I will, I'll join you by phone.
Hey, that works. Whatever works. Yeah. Cause you were in mid. Oh, wait a second. No, he didn't. So this guy knows my sister. He's like, aren't you Regina's little brother? Uh-huh. No, Regina is now my sister. We flipped that script. All right. So jump back into what you were saying.
So do me a favor. Do me a quick reminder because, you know, obviously one panics when their power goes out. So
this is true. So I was talking about how I got my competitive edge from being the youngest of the seven siblings, and I carried that with me. And then you just started talking when it froze.
Ooh, okay. I think I've lost my train of thought, so my apologies. So we'll
start a new train of thought.
Thank you. Appreciate that.
Let me see. It was just helping idle chat during a power outage. Couldn't help it. You're forgiven, Steve. I appreciate that. You're forgiven.
Yeah, well, it's really funny. Here's what's fascinating, right? So Let me tell you what I just did. Okay. I actually was vulnerable, right? I actually shared the truth. I mean, I just really, because you know, as a guest or as a host, we're supposed to remember everything. We're supposed to know everything and be this all-powerful thing. But part of being credible is showing up as you.
Yes.
And so let me share of the research I did. There's one word there are 10 values of credibility. There's one value that appeared twice. Now, when I published the research, I still didn't know why that value appeared twice. So I figured that out about a year later. Okay. But the value happens to be integrity. So the definition of credibility needs to be extended from what it's in the dictionary. What it says in the dictionary is that credibility is the quality in which you're trusted. Now that's somewhat important. Mm-hmm. And that is the most important, but I'm saying there's two other things. Credibility is the quality in which you're trusted, known, and liked. And by known, it's not that I know of you, it's that I know you.
Yes.
And so it's really fascinating about the word integrity. Under being trusted, it turns out that it's your external integrity. It's what you say to the world you are. Now, what's interesting about as people get to know you is what is your internal integrity, right? And so this is where many politicians, this is where many celebrities have fallen apart. Because with everyone having a camera and everyone having a microphone, you can't live in the world that is do what I say, not what I do. You need to live in the world of, hey, listen, if you have external integrity, they need to align with your internal integrity. Because if they don't, you will be seen as somebody who's not authentic. You'll see it as somebody that doesn't have integrity. You'll be seen as somebody who's not credible.
Absolutely. Spot on. Yeah, that's right up there with authenticity. Like, again, as I open the show, like with the tank top, like I've been in the fitness forever and I've been an athlete forever. It's like, this is my authentic look. It's like, I don't walk around in a shirt and tie. And so like when I speak on other people's platforms, you know, I respectfully tell them, usually by the time they ask me to speak on their platforms, they've known of me somehow. But like, if I'm cold pitching people, if they respond, I do say, are you okay with me coming up in a tank top? Like, because if you're not, then I'm not speaking.
So here's what's interesting. So I have two paths to go on authenticity. So one is what often happens when somebody shows up in a tank top when they come to my show. I go, hey, you look great. Is this how you would like your clients to see you? And if the answer is not yes, I'm like, well, why are you wearing a tank top? Why are you showing me disrespect by showing up in a way that's not you? If it is you, if this is who you want to be, now, if you didn't have a top on at all, I probably wouldn't do the show, but tank top, okay.
That's a little different.
So, well, that would be a different type of show, and that's not one I play on. So, okay. So, what's interesting about the word authenticity, it's society has given it to, let me step back for a second. Of the 10 values of credibility, authenticity is one of the most powerful. What I will say, though, that authenticity doesn't mean you're good.
Thanks.
Right? And that's the thing. You could authentically be a jerk and people still love you because you're showing up as your authentic self.
It's true.
Right. And so that's the thing, that's when you hear a consultant say, hey, we're going to go into the company and the company is going to be authentic. That's not necessarily a good thing. There are other attributes to focus on. It's to me, there are other it's being able to have the intent and commitment to do the right thing that makes it worthwhile. You have to be authentic and then have some moral values and codes of servicing the audience you serve to make authenticity worthwhile.
So what did you do for a career before you went down the credibility path?
Well, up until 1997, a couple of years ago, I was in different sort of corporate jobs. So when I left, my last job working for another company was in 1997. I was working for Sun Microsystems. Okay. So I was running the e-commerce component of Sun Supply Chain. This was during the dot-com days. And as an entrepreneur, I basically, I know it's just too exciting to not want to put my ring in the hat and say, hey, listen, I could make money as an entrepreneur. And so I started working for myself in 1997. If we move on from there, I started off as an e-commerce consultant, which at the time more meant of going to companies and helping them understand how they're going to use this new technology. You know, how are you going to use the internet to talk to your customers? And how do you use the internet to actually have your manufacturing organizations potentially ship the product directly to your customers? Back in that point in time, what was really funny, well, so I don't know if this is funny or not, but I actually was physically kicked out of the offices of two companies. Okay. Because the CEO and the VP of operations would say, hey, Mitchell, the internet's just a fad. Why are you talking to me? So I did that until the dot bomb. That's about the time I was asked to join the board of a public company. I was running four different CEO networking groups for about a decade. And then in 2005, I started my first book publishing company. And so we have now published over 750 books. I've written 65.
Wow.
The easy part of writing a book is when you have a company where you know it's going to be published and you create formulas to make it easy for your customers to write books. By definition, I have to practice, right? So as both a guinea pig and also as a business development tool, I would use books to open up more clients. And what got me to credibility was, for a long time, I recognized that book publishing was going to be democratized, right? And now, largely what that means is anyone who wants to write and publish a book really can, particularly with GPT, you don't even have to spend a lot of effort to write a book. And with Amazon, it's very easy to publish it. So you could be a published author literally tomorrow if you were interested in doing that.
Yes.
That doesn't.
Let me ask you. Let me ask you, what was your motivation for starting that publishing company?
Ooh, that's interesting.
I told you I asked the good questions.
Well, you do ask good questions. Well, you're asking the questions to get to the core of who people are. And I think many of us, I'll give you two answers. Many of us at some point in time in our lives, particularly people with these gray hairs, they were sort of brought up with the opportunity to say, hey, you're going to write the next American novel. You're going to write that next book that really takes off. Maybe that was part of it. I'm not sure. Right. So I'll just say that's one answer. The other thing was when I was thinking about buying my first house, everyone kept saying, you have to. You got to buy this house. This is like everyone, you know, and when 90% of the world says you have to do this because everyone else is doing it, Mitchell says, I can't just say yes because you say it's important. I got to research it.
Yes.
So I ended up, the first book I ever wrote, I was still working at Sun Microsystems, and it was called Home Ownership, The American Myth. Mm. And what I did is I put my engineering hat on and I did the research and I came up with this spreadsheet. And what it ultimately came down to is, if you move into a city where you believe that real estate prices are going to go up, you should most likely buy a house. If you're not sure if real estate prices are going to go up and you don't know if you're going to buy a house, one of the things that a house does for you, it becomes a forced savings account. So if you're not going to buy a house, figure out a way where you could force yourself to save X amount of dollars per month. And so that was the book. I wasn't anti-home ownership. Although, by the way, the coolest thing that happened to me is the largest syndicated columnist in the U.S. just trashed the book because he didn't read it. He just assumed I was anti-home ownership. And that actually was a lot of people bought it just because. But it was, I wrote the book because I saw a myth in society that everyone said, go write. And I'm like, I'm not sure. Maybe we should think about that. And I wanted to write about it and let other people know about the journey that I took to make my decision.
That's great. That's a big problem in this country and just in general, where people just blindly follow. And it's like you, I question everything, absolutely everything, especially now with these little gadgets right here. You have all the answers. Well, most of the answers right at your fingertips. It's like, just take a second and just look a little bit deeper into this. You know, and not just take what somebody else's word is. At the end of the day, we're all humans, and humans do make mistakes. You know, so definitely do that research. So from there, you wrote the first book, and so now, what inspired the other 64?
Well, I think once I wrote the first book, I was very excited about writing and knowing what to do once you had a book, because it's typically for most of us, you don't write a book and it just magically takes off.
Yeah.
Right. Even if you get a publisher who is a New York type publisher who's going to push your book, it's still about your network and people knowing about you, having it resonate, and having the ability where you're continually marketing your book. It was in 2005, so a couple years after the dot-com bust, when I was thinking about what should I be doing next? What do I really want to focus on? That's when I started my first book publishing company. I now have four. And so I have to go back and see, did I write any books between 1996 and 2005? So I have to look at that. Okay. But once I put the book publishing company in place, I started writing books because what I would try to do is create it and make it easy for people to write. So I'll give you an example. One of the book companies, or one of the book series we did, was called 42 Rules. The 42 Rules series is comprised of 42 500-word articles in a book. And so it's basically, if you have 42 blog posts that are about 500 words, that represents a book. And so that was the 42 Rules series. So I wrote a couple books in there, and then we had, I think, 26, 27 other authors also publish in that series. I created a series called Think Aha. The Think Aha series was comprised of 140 Twitter-sized quotes. Right? Now, we didn't just do 140 quotes. We would say, hey, put the quotes in the sections and so on. And then when I was working with the authors, most of the time, authors are thinking that they're done when the book is done. And so before I even started, I would say, by the way, when the book is done, that's actually when you start. As a matter of fact, you could start now, but what you're starting is the writing is so irrelevant. It's not that it's zero. The writing is important. But what really is important is, well, how do you make sure that asset called a book gets in the hands of the person who's going to talk about it or use it or share it with others?
Or want to hear about it, like on stage.
Or, as you said, hear about it on stage. Yeah. And so I think it was so much fun. For a number of years, I would do best practices, upcoming trends, and I would put that into a book. I'm just saying, every time I did a series, there's at least a couple books underneath there. And of course, when I did the research on credibility, there's a book, and it's like many authors, I now need to update that. And so, there's a difference between if you listen to your customers. By the way, not everyone listens to their customers, right? If you listen to your customers as you're practicing what you've learned, they're going to give you amazing ideas to update it. And so if you are, another value of being credible is being coachable. If you're coachable, you're going to learn what it is that's important. Can I tell you a story? Would you mind?
Absolutely. Go right ahead.
So we're going to talk about so I did 500 interviews. The first question I would ask people is the formula that I use. It's called CPOP, customer point of. Now, I call it now customer point of possibilities, but during the 500 interviews, I called it customer point of pain. So my first question when I would talk to somebody is, what's your customer point of pain? And so one of my good friends, Raju Sethi, Raju has been in Silicon Valley for 30 years. He's helped like 3,000 startup companies. Wow. And about, I think it could have been about a year, somewhere between 10 to 12 months after I published the results. Okay, so it took me a year. I interviewed 500 people. I did a TEDx. The TEDx is called We Are Losing Our Humanity, and I'm Tired of Watching It Happen. I published my book. It was all called Customer Point of Pain. And so Raj was comfortable enough to say, hey, Mitchell, why don't you turn on recording and you help me get my CPOP? And so we went ahead and did it, and I gave him his CPOP, and he goes, Mitchell, this would normally take me 10 to 15 minutes to share, and now I can share it in a second or two. Let me share his CPOP. His CPOP, game changers looking for their secret sauce. So think about that as the playground he plays in. And what's important is not only do you need to know the playground you play in, but how do you play in the playground? And I call that the tell me more. So Raj was extremely excited. He went away. We had a call scheduled for the following week because I wanted to hear how he felt about it. First words out of his mouth were, Mitchell, I don't care if you call it customer point of pain. I'm calling it customer point of possibilities. Now, think about the sunk cost that I had. 500 people I interviewed. I recorded them and called them customer point of pain. I did the TEDx, customer point of pain. I did the book, customer point of pain. And in about 3 seconds, I go, Rajesh, you're right. It is customer point of possibilities. And that, it as somebody who is quote unquote, I would consider myself an expert at that point in time. But somebody came along and just completely gave me something better. And that's important as a human, is to actually recognize that you're coachable and somebody else can come by with another idea. And you're like, Raj, I'm going to use this from now on. Thank you.
Yeah, no, that's awesome. Because that happens every single day where people try to give advice and people blow it off because they think they know everything. It's like, yes, I've been in fitness, you know, formerly in fitness for 15 years. And so it's like, I've trained thousands of people, mostly women and moms, you know, like well over 3,000, but I don't know everything. So like when I'm speaking with other trainers, I speak to learn. Some people speak to speak. It's like, they just want to speak about how smart they are. You know, and I'm like, all right, so what angle does this person come at endurance training, or this person take on recovery and foam rolling or whatever, and see how I can uplift myself. Like in one of my earlier podcasts, I said people always upgrade these, but they don't upgrade this. And that's much more important. You like that one?
I like that one. That's very cool.
Thank you. All right, so let's get back into credibility. We got about what, 13 minutes or so? And so you made that journey. You have the publishing companies. You're obviously employing people. So, like, outside of money, what do you get out of creating all of this personally?
Ooh. When I had introspection of who I am and what I do, there's one area that I don't think I'm very smart at, and that is I only speak one language, and it's even bad American English, okay? That said, an area that I think I'm very intuitive at is helping somebody understand what somebody else is saying, right? So many times when I look at my career and things that I did, I was helping, let's say, the finance people understand what the IT people were saying, or I helped marketing understand what finance or what IT was saying. So being able to take content from different areas and help people understand each other. And what I can do now, what is the most powerful for me, I'm going to make a statement that's terribly controversial. I'm going to say that based on my research, 98% of every human on the planet has no clarity on who they are and what they're doing. 98%.
I agree. Before you continue, when I first started this podcast, I would ask the guests, because like I don't vet the guests ahead of time, because I like the conversation to be as organic as possible. So just raw and real.
By the way, there's nothing more organic than somebody's power going out right in the middle of the podcast.
So true.
I'm happy to help you.
But like I used to ask the guests, I would say, who is Mitchell? Right? And you would be surprised. Like people struggled answering that question. It got to the point where when I brought them, like just before we came live, I would tell them. I started telling them up front. And then even then, they were still butchering the answer. And I was like, you are a successful entrepreneur. I'm like, at this stage in the game, how can you not define who you are? But this goes back to what I've said earlier, is because people think the hats that they wear is who they are at their core.
Right. Right.
And that's not it. It's like, what drove you to become these things that you become, or created these things that you've created? It's like, who is that person? So yeah, so I believe you 100% when you say 98% of people don't know who they are.
So, by the way, I'm going to say thank you. And by the way, you could absolutely see the synergies of what we do together, because where I spend my energy and what I get super pumped about is when I can listen to somebody and give them and help them pull out what their 10 or less words are.
Yes.
Right. So if you permit me, I will share mine. I currently have 8 words, and I'll share one of my clients who has 5. Okay. And then what I'm going to say is, I am really good at the helping people understand their CPOP, customer pointed possibilities. And then what I often tell them is that their tell me more, the story, the thing that you're really good at, basically comes easy for them if they live in their playground. The CPOP to me is the playground you play at.
Yes.
Where you come in is helping people articulate their story in their playground.
Yes.
So it's a really nice, to me, that's where the combo comes. So first, let me share me. I never thought I would actually, the concept of the CPOP, it's the who and the what. So who do you serve, and either what is their pain point or what is their pleasure point? I never thought I would possibly ever serve, I'm going to say coaches, by the way. I never thought that it'd be focused just on coaches. And the reason I'm here, well, actually, I'll tell you the reason when I do the tell me more. All right, so my CPOP, the clients I'm attracted to, coaches who've created a job, not a business. So, by the way, I love the, oh yeah, I get that. Well, let me tell you what that means. There are so many coaches out there, probably so many people on your show, and they've been taught how to do transformation. They've been taught how to bring a company or an individual from A to B. Yep. But what they've not been taught, how do you run a business? How do you have a conversation? How do you actually have a good set of referral partners who would come to you? How do you have a good set of clients that continually come to you? We have a Done With You program where we help transform the coach to be somebody who acts more like an entrepreneur. So what's interesting about that is I told you my playground, and then I told you how I play in the playground. Yep. Well, because I was able to articulate the playground in less than 10 words, all of a sudden I get this incremental credibility because of the clarity that I have.
Yes.
Do you mind if I try it with one other person? This is one of my clients, and her 5 words are powerful enough, but I'll then give you her tell me more. And this is where your superpower, and I just wanted your audience to hear it. When you can actually use this formula, the CPOP formula, the storytelling now has a home, and it turns out to be a credible home. And it turns out to be a place that becomes much easier for you to play in. So her name's Katrin, and she's attracted to successful women, heavy with regret. Like, oh my God. Well, it's like, I could stop right there, and you actually know who to recommend her. Right. But let me do her 1 minute. Tell me more. Right. And it'll be less than a minute. She's attracted to that audience because that was her. She was married, had the job, had kids, and was miserable for a couple of years. And she spent the time and energy to figure out how can she not be miserable. And once she got the tools and the practices in place, she's now done this with over 250 other successful women. And it's what her passion is what she gets excited about.
Love it. That's awesome. So when people ask me what I do, I say I help busy moms prioritize themselves.
Now, is it prioritize themselves overall, or is it about the, or do you do the fitness thing too?
It's overall, like, I combine a lot of like life coaching into my fitness training, because I find when a lot of women become moms, you know, society has conditioned them that they go on the back burner and that everybody else is first. And I just try to help them see, when you're the happiest, healthiest version of yourself, everybody in your circle benefits. You know, so when I put it to them that way, like, cause when you're out of shape, when you can't keep up with the kids, when you're eating unhealthy, like, you're not teaching the kids any good habits, you know, for them to learn and grow with. They're not seeing you happy. They're seeing you overwhelmed. They're seeing you stressed out. It's like, and that's going to become their normal. But if they see you enjoying yourself, if they see you happy, they see you healthy, they see you being you, living in joy, living in the moment and being present for them, that's going to hit completely different. So it's not just about losing weight and popping muscles. It's like every class that I set up, there's some type of life lesson going through it. Like if we were doing a weighted wall sit and then with some pretty heavy kettlebells, and some of the women were like, oh, this is too heavy. I said, you gave birth to three kids. You're trying to tell me you can't hold a 45-second wall sit? You know, it's like, and when they think about it that way, it just hits different. So I think that's what stands us out from everyone else. It's like, it's not just about, you know, pushing weights and burning X amount of calories. It's about going through something to get to something.
Nice. Would you be open for a quick coachable moment?
Absolutely.
So one of the things that we often do, because this is what we've been trained, is we often start with the word I help, I serve. Now, one of the problems with the fact that everyone has one of these, I'm on my phone, I'd rather be on my computer, but everyone has a camera, everyone has a phone, everyone has a microphone, is that there are a lot of people who are just selling you stuff all the time. Yeah. And the point is, it's not about you. When, if you want somebody to recommend you, they're not going to recommend you because you're great at something. They're going to recommend you something because that you're really, you know, your audience, and they go, oh, I'd like to, I don't want to recommend this guy who's a salesperson. I want to recommend this person because he's really good at what he does. Yes. Right. So I often encourage people to start with the who, and for you, it's busy moms.
Yeah.
Right. And then, what's interesting, by the way, when I thought about you, and this is what's fascinating about people who are really raw and live out loud, is you said your CPAP in the first 10 seconds you talked about yourself. I'm just going to tell you what you said so you could hear it in a different way, because yours is four words.
Okay.
Mine is eight. Katrin's is five. You can do it in four. Right? So it's busy moms prioritizing themselves.
I'm going to jot that down.
Because when I said to you, you know, or when you started saying everything that you do for busy moms prioritizing themselves, and it's not just the weightlifting, but it's everything, and it's acting as if they are in control because they are in control, that's your tell me more.
Love it.
But if you start off with clients I'm attracted to or clients attracted to me, busy moms prioritizing themselves, it becomes very easy for you to see. And by the way, I should probably do an intro between you and Katrin, because there's definitely overlap there with what you two are doing.
Okay. Absolutely. Yeah. I definitely have some intros for you as well. I got a lot of podcast friends.
Nice. Thank you.
No problem. All right. So it looks like we're almost to time. So give us some final words. Let people know where they can find you and all that good stuff.
You know, the best place to do this is just going to my website. So it's MitchellLevy.com. So it's MitchellLevy.com. And there you'll see all the things that I'm doing, including a calendar link you can get on my calendar. One of the things that's right around the corner is a free summit I'm doing called Coaching Fest. And so you can actually go directly to coachingfest.com, or you can get to it through MitchellLevy.com. And it is 2 days of some of the best coaching professionals on the planet talking about kind of what, a little bit what, you know, who are you? How do you show up? How do you do good stuff for your website? How do you, you know, how do you put the right programs in place and price them properly? And so I'm doing three summits that is that are aimed at helping anyone who's in the coaching or consulting space. And so that's at coachingfest.com.
Is that live or is that virtual? Excuse me, virtual.
It is. Oh, thank you. Great question. It's virtual. It's virtual. So it's a free event. Sign up for it, and you can watch it when you know during those 2 days.
And what's the dates again?
April 25th and 26th.
Ooh, I might be able to do that. What are the times?
Oh, it is the way the room is going to be open up, I think, for that 24-hour period, or at least a 12-hour period, where you'll be able to see I interview 7 people each day.
Oh, okay.
All half-hour interviews, all, like, for instance, Marshall Goldsmith, the number one CEO coach on the planet. The woman, Magdalena Mook, who runs the ICF, the International Coaching Federation. One of my favorites is someone I work with called Kimberly Wykamp. Her session, how to just write good content today, given what's going on with AI. Her session was so powerful that when I was done with it, I took the recording, loaded it up to my own private Vimeo, sent it to my team and said, can you guys watch this 2 or 3 times and then we can talk about it? Because it's the types of conversations I had, very similar to you. I'm asking the types of questions that are relevant to the audience I serve. And the answers were chock full with formulas and ideas and opportunities to grow.
Awesome. Good stuff. This was a very fun conversation. Like when it was like, I do a quick once over on the bio, just so I know what your main talk is about. And I was like, credibility. I was like, in 300 shows, like never did like an entire show about credibility. So I wasn't sure if I was going to be able to hang with you, but we did just fine. There was just one. Thank you. So like this one time I interviewed a nuclear scientist. I had to tell him backstage, I'm like, you're going to have to dumb this down a little. I said, I'll do my best to ask relevant questions, but I don't know if I can add much value to what you're going to share. I said, so I'll just ask questions. All right. Don't sign out yet, but thank you for taking the time and you know to come and share your story. I have an upcoming panel coming up where I bring back anywhere from 4 to 6 of my prior guests and we just roundtable a certain topic. And I pick the topics based on the 6 guests that are coming because obviously I make sure I pick something that everybody can speak to. So if you're interested in that, let me know.
Sure. You're an interesting – we should have another conversation talking about a little bit of synergy, and I'll be happy to do that with you.
All right. Awesome. Sounds great. All right. I'll see you in a minute. Don't sign out yet, please.
Okay. Right. No.
That was Mitchell. That was a really fun conversation. I learned a lot. Oh, we got a comment over here. Great show. Thanks, guys. Thank you, Steve. Much appreciated. But yes, if you happen to jump in late, go back and watch this whole thing. This was a really solid episode. A lot of good golden nuggets. Mitchell's a fabulous man. Can't wait to talk to him again. And I will be back again on Monday with episode number 301. As always, shut up and grind.
You've been listening to Shut Up and Grind. We hope you've gotten some useful and practical information from this show. Robert has over 20 years experience pouring his knowledge and expertise at many events in the service and fitness industry, as well as secondary schools and universities. He has a true passion for helping others break through the barriers that are holding them back. To book Robert B. Foster to speak or to reach out, go to robertbfoster.com. Till next time, shut up and grind.